Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com.
Let me ask you a question. Are you getting enough? I bet you'd love more, right? Well, AdamandEve.com wants to give you more. 10 free gifts more specifically. So you'll get sexy surprises for her, for him, for them, for they, for y'all. Stuff for everybody to enjoy, including 6 full-length adult movies. One of the gifts to you, one of the great surprises, is that it is free shipping on the entire order. So how do you get all of these presents? Well, it's actually surprisingly not that hard. So go to AdamandEve.com, select whatever item it is you want, and what's fun is that for a limited time only, you'll get about 50% off on just about any item. And then when you go to checkout, use the code SWT at checkout. That's SWT. It's short for Sex with Simmery. I know you're very smart. You would have figured that out. But just to reiterate the point, use SWT at checkout at AdamandEve.com. And this is not only a way to get free shit, but to support the show as well. So thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting. Now go get your free gifts. Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Timmery. I am excited, guys. Friends, let me tell you, I didn't know I was going to get to see this person today. I mean, I knew that this episode was coming up, but like, I'm just really excited. I'm just really excited because not only is this conversation going to be incredible and you're going to learn a lot and I'm going to learn a lot, but this guest is someone I haven't gotten to see in years and I got to see for the first time today, Jacqueline Holloway. How are you doing?
I'm doing so good. I'm so happy. Thank you for having me.
It has been a 1,000 billion literal years since I saw you. When we were dinosaurs and we grazed the plains before the meteors. Yeah, we haven't seen each other in forever. And we got to know each other through a degree of theatrical performance. And then you are doing it more hardcore. Do you want to tell the nice people how we met?
We met, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I have a bunch of memories lumped into one. But we met through Cabaret Red Light.
Yeah, yeah.
Doing a burlesque show.
A burlesque show.
Lust.
Yeah, it was all about like laws about sexuality.
It was amazing.
Yeah. And then like many years passed and I have not really seen you much. And now we are catching up and we have like taken what we had from that and we've expanded for it. And now you're doing incredible theatrical stuff. So you're a fight director and you're a consent and movement coach. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean?
Which part?
All of it. Yeah.
Well, I'm a fight director, which means I go into mostly theater. And it's my job to take any kind of violence in plays, and I make it safe for the actors, most of all, and for the audience. And I make it look good. And whether that's it needs to be realistic looking, really visceral violence, or big cartoonish, over-the-top superhero fighting, that's my job, is to help move the storyline forward using violence. And I've been doing that for quite some time now. And I have more recently, in the past 3 years, I've started teaching consent in theaters, for theater programs, for colleges, for universities, for high schools. And that has started taking up the majority of my time. And it's my passion, I found.
So my thought is, holy cats, how is that not a job before? Because it seems like it's a relatively new phenomenon that theater is finally catching up on. The fuck is that about?
I know, right? So how has this not been around for a long time? So I started thinking about this a few years ago. I've started thinking about this a while, and I'm sure a lot of people have. But within stage combats, so when I started doing stage combat and fight directing, which was about 10 years ago, the purpose is to really focus on safety, right? Your physical safety and keeping all the actors safe. So you would never put up a Romeo and Juliet and expect them to do big, huge sword fights without teaching them how to do it safely, right? More often than not, you don't hand actors swords and say, go to town. So that's been around not even that long. I think the Society of American Fight Directors was founded in, this is horrible, I want to say the 60s. 1960s.
Okay.
I mean, swords have been around for a lot longer and theater has been around for a lot longer, but that is still a relatively new concept. So over that time, it was always like, yeah, no, this totally makes all the sense in the world. Let's keep our actors safe. Let's not stab them. But we don't really think about any other kind of safety. And what's the other major theme in Romeo and Juliet? It's violence and sex. So nobody's talking to these actors about how to keep themselves physically or emotionally safe in these scenes. So I started toying around with that idea and with a few friends. And we started talking about how do we keep our actors and our performers and our audiences emotionally safe within the confines of the show. And so the answer was, oh, right, consent, obviously. Why aren't we doing that? And then from there, the conversation started spreading, and then the Me Too movement happened, and the Time's Up movement happened, which has been a great, great thing to push this movement forward, this idea of getting consent forward. So that's kind of how it kind of started, and I don't know why it hasn't been around, but it's around now. And yeah.
Yeah. In a previous episode we had, a very recent previous episode, so if folks are listening and want to look it up, we had on Jacqueline Goldfinger, who was talking about her play Click, which had to do with consent and technology and rape and all that kind of stuff. And in the span of it, we talked about theater itself and the problems related to navigating touching and intimacy on stage, and how there's been a problem for however long theaters existed where people will go beyond the boundaries of consent and will engage in behavior that is ultimately not appropriate with the argument that they were like in the moment or being the character or something of that, and you know, disproportionately affecting some people over others. I'm sure you can speak to this much better than I.
Yeah, no, there is countless of times where performers have been sexually or physically or emotionally assaulted during productions because there are scenes of an intimate nature that they're left to their own devices, so they kind of figure it out, but nobody talks about, well, these are my boundaries and I'm not comfortable with this, but I am comfortable with this. So people get assaulted. People get physically assaulted, again, because they don't have the right professionals helping them. So there's a scene and they're like, oh, well, this person, it's a quick little fight, so they'll figure it out, and they get hurt. There's very specific instances. There was one that came out of Chicago a couple of years ago where they're doing a production of Killer Joe. And after the production closed, an actress came out to say that she was assaulted every show, physically and emotionally and sexually, because the lead actor just, he kept going too far, night after night, too far and too far and too far, and his hands kept moving places where they weren't supposed to move, but she was afraid to say anything. So this happens all the time, and I feel like it's an easy fix. All we need to do is be respectful and know people's boundaries and talk, communicate to each other, and we can avoid all of this.
It's such a really obvious problem when we like just discuss it openly. I think about the things I've heard about on movie sets, like Last Tango in Paris, and the way that the director and actors, fucking Marlon Brando, collaborated together basically to like sexually assault a woman on screen. And something about not only is it like crap in general, but what the fuck does it say that you don't trust your actors? That you think that you need to have this realistic surprise or response, that you don't think that they can fucking give in a performance unless they're actively being assaulted? Like, how bad of a director are you? How bad do you think your actors are?
Right. And it's you're bad and you're lazy.
Yeah.
Because the audience knows. The audience knows when something is going wrong. The audience knows if an actor is uncomfortable because you can see it, because you can sense it. If an actor goes up on a line, we know. And it's not that we judge the whole play for it. We don't leave saying, well, that actor forgot that one line, so that was a shitty show. you don't. You fix the problem and you move on. But I don't understand. I'm really emotional for a minute. It blows my fucking mind that it's expected for actors to just deal with it and keep their mouths shut, or you're gonna lose a job, or you're gonna lose an opportunity because you don't just hush up about it and do the thing. No, that's not directing. That's not acting. That's not putting on a play. It's a play. It's not real. It's a storytelling method. I'm so angry about it.
And realistically, I think it's super reasonable to be upset about it, because this is, on a very granular level, the problem that we're dealing with culturally, which is that, like, we know what consent is theoretically. We just have to actually give a fuck and have to actually go to the trouble of asking someone their boundaries and taking proactive effort to be like, the responsibility is actually mine to make sure that I know what your boundaries are and that I'm not crossing them. The responsibility is not on you to stop me, actually.
No, it's not.
Yeah. So I think that's like on a very fundamental level, the thing that we're grappling with culturally, and theater has this very proximal, specific instance of it, in addition to all the other cultural things, you know, surrounding like being an actor and being in an entertainment field and being, you know, preyed upon as an entertainer. So it seems like a no-brainer, and I'm just so glad that you're doing it. So you stumble upon this concept, this idea. What does it look like in practice?
Using consent in, mm-hmm. in theater?
Yeah.
It looks exactly like it does in real life, mm. honestly. I'm not going to come up to you and put my hands on you unless I ask for your consent, right? I'm not going to put you in any kind of situation that you're unprepared for. It's as simple as that. It's very simple. And I run these workshops where all of the exercises are geared towards that. They're geared towards learning how to ask for consent, to check in with somebody, to build this communication. And they're also about learning how to say no to things that you are uncomfortable with. And I think that's a huge stumbling block for people, especially with performers that have been told time and time again that if you don't book this job, then you're not going to have a job. Or if you don't do what they ask you to do, then you're going to get fired. And then you're never going to work again, or you're going to get blacklisted. And that's just not true. It really isn't. So people, they're afraid to say no. They're afraid to say no, and they don't know how to say no. And saying no is difficult, because in our society, we are taught from a very, very early age that you're not allowed to say no. And that there is a negative connotation that comes with no, just the word no. And I do this in a lot of my workshops. I ask them, what comes up for you when I say the word no? What kind of response does that trigger? And it's always negative. It's always rejection or fear, or I'm nervous, or I've done something wrong. It's never powerful, you know, something good. But no is a very, very good word. And it's an excellent tool that we have to use. And we don't know how to use it, and we don't know how to hear it.
This is a conversation that we have in like BDSM spaces as well, like asking people what their boundaries are, what their limitations are, because the scene is so much better when everybody is on board. It's a lot more fun, you know, than what we're aiming for, unless you're just like straight up like a not good person sadist. Like, sadism isn't good or bad. Sadism is just enjoying that. But if you're like a sociopath, you know, like, then other than that, with that exception, these things are better when everybody's on board. And no is helpful. It is telling me what the like lines are so that I can make this the best situation possible for both of us. And one of the things that I would love to see normalized is the idea of responding to a no with, thank you for taking care of yourself. And thank you for helping me do it.
Absolutely. And it's so difficult. And we can't say no unless we practice it, unless we do it in our lives. I tell this story every time I teach this, whenever we start talking about no, I tell this story about how I was going to visit a lot of friends. They were doing a show out of town, and I was going to go visit them, And with that, I was going to meet the rest of the cast. And because I was friends with a good number of the cast, my name had been tossed around a couple of times. Like, oh, Jax is coming down to see us. It's so exciting. So when I got there, a few people had heard of me. But I'm not necessarily a huggy person. I love to hug and touch and snuggle and all of that with people that I know. But with strangers, I'm much more reserved. I have a much bigger bubble. So I was really anxious on the drive down. Oh no, what if people, like, it's theater people. What if they want to hug me? It's no big deal. I teach consent. I'm just going to say no. I'm not a hugger. And whatever. So I get to this party, because of course it's all a party. I get there and I say hi to some of my friends and I hug them and I meet some new people and we shake hands or just wave hello. And then this like big 6 foot nothing guy comes bounding across the room, all smiles. And he's like, Jax, I'm so excited to meet you. I'm a hugger. And he like comes in for the hug. And in my mind, like my logical mind was like, here's your chance. Practice saying no. And then my body took this weird martial arts stance and I thrust my hand out and I turned away and I just yelled, no! Oh, God. And then, of course, because I feel like I need to validate it and I need to take care of his feelings. And I'm like, oh, my God, it's not you. It's me. I'm not a hugger. I mean, I am a hugger, but I just don't hug people that I don't know and I don't trust them. And well, not that I don't trust you. You're probably totally cool. And oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I just, hey. And this guy, bless his heart, was like, cool, yeah. And just walked away. It's like, oh God. And that's the moment where I realized this shit is fucking hard. It is fucking hard to do. So we need to practice it. So we spend a lot of time in my workshops practicing in different scenarios, just saying no.
I love this. So like my experience in like the kind of workshops that I do where it's not necessarily so purposeful, like you're leading to something that's going to be choreographed, that there's like a storyline, you know, that sort of thing. You've got already like a little bit of structure. I learned an activity, I think I was at the Woodhull Conference. So shout out to the Woodhull Freedom Alliance and their like sex positivity conference everyone should go to in DC. I think that's where you learn this, but you have students in the room and just walk up to a person and ask, can I, you know, like touch your sweater? And then the person responds, if the answer is yes, yeah, go ahead. Or no, but you sure can look at it from over there, you know, or something like that. And it's just silly nonsense of like, you see someone and you're like, can I look at your necklace? Can I touch your hair? I mean, like whatever sort of weird thing that might be totally fine or might be really not fine. And then the person is challenged to go, how do I actually feel about that? And those are the two things, is like first actually having to like come up with like, what is it that I want? Why, you know, like I have to actually actively think this through as opposed to like, this is what people do when they greet each other. And this is what people behave like. But actively thinking like, what do I want? And then the other person like, well, what do I want? And actively making this as a collaborative decision rather than like, people like us shake hands, people like us hug. And if we don't do that, that's inherently some sort of like deviation from the plan. So I think just that intentionality of like having thought, do I like any of these people? Like, just like stopping and thinking about it, like, what am I doing here? And what is the point of this? And like, you know, I personally just really appreciate it when I ask somebody like, you want a hug? And they're like, no. And I'm like, thanks, man. Like, thank you for like going on that adventure with me.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. Because so often we get stuck in this place of, I don't want to do the thing that you're asking me. But instead of saying no, I feel that I need to take care of your feelings and I need to take care of you on this. So I'm going to say yes so that you don't feel bad, even though I haven't even stopped to consider my feelings or why I have my feelings or that it's okay to have these feelings. You know, we try to take care of each other. And God, consent is, it's so much mindfulness. There's a lot of mindful work that goes into consent because you've really got to be able to look at yourself there's, I don't know if you're familiar with DBT, dialectical behavioral therapy.
A little bit, but let's talk about it.
I fucking love it. So I use a lot of that in consent work, and it's Deborah Linham came up with it, I think, in the 80s, 83 or something, the idea of DBT as a practice. And mindfulness is a huge, huge part of that. And it's if you take your brain, and this is very simple explanation. If you take your brain and you just section it off into two parts, either your emotional mind and your logical mind, your emotional mind is the things that you feel and your logical mind are the things that you know, right? So some people respond emotionally to everything. I do. I respond emotionally to anything first. And then it takes me a while for my logical mind to kind of step in. Some people respond logically to everything first. But if you take those two minds as if they were two circles and you overlap them like a Venn diagram, in the middle is wise mind. And so that's taking your emotions into account and taking the logic of the situation into account at the same time, looking at them together, holding them dialectically. And then you're able to really decide, is this what I want to do? So if you're in a situation in a play, and it's not been discussed in the contract, but if your director asks you to take off your shirt, I can think, okay, how do I feel about this emotionally? How do I feel about this logically, right? And put them together and say, okay, I'm uncomfortable with this, but I know now that I'm uncomfortable because it is a new situation, not that I'm uncomfortable because I feel unsafe. Because people get really hung up there. Because you can be uncomfortable and it's still okay. You can still give consent to something that you're like, I'm not sure about this, but I'm gonna move ahead cautiously because you're making that decision and you're living in this wise mind space. So you're in control and you're really in touch with how you feel, as opposed to I don't like this, I'm uncomfortable and I feel unsafe. And that's, the answer is no. The answer is absolutely no on that. Living in this mindful space is really, I think, crucial for people when they move into this work in theater. But like, actually, spoilers, it's the same thing.
I mean, it sounds like just a good practice for navigating sexuality in general.
It's the exact same thing.
Because it's like the decision on whether to engage in a behavior or a relationship or any of those sort of things based on the idea that like, no, I can't do that, and people like me don't do that, and therefore the answer is no. I don't even have to think about whether I want to or not.
Mm-hmm.
And we see why that's a problem, right? Like, people have stymied themselves and painted themselves into corners and end up in situations where they end up acting out because they haven't been looking at what it is they want in conjunction with what it is that they need and they value. So I think that, you're speaking to sexual decision making overall, just the idea that like there's a difference between discomfort because this is outside of my familiarity and discomfort because this is against my wishes and my values. And we can be very, very comfortable with things that are super against our values and our wishes.
Sure.
So like this particular outlook seems to be something we could use just like across the board.
Absolutely. And the beauty of theater, especially right now, and film as well, film is moving in that direction, is that you don't have to make those decisions on your own, because there is, or there should be, should is a judgment, but I'm going to go ahead and throw that judgment out. There should be a choreographer to help you, or somebody on set or in the theater to help you make these decisions. As a fight director, it's my job to look at these actors and watch them work and work with them, where if they're uncomfortable with a certain move or anything, then I can say, okay, great. Well, my job is to literally think of a million different things that we can do so you don't have to do this thing that's uncomfortable. Or if it's an intimate scene, then you have an intimacy choreographer there to help walk you through that so that at any point you can say, you know what? I'm not uncomfortable with this. I'm not uncomfortable with their hand here, or I'm not uncomfortable with the tightness of this hug or this particular kiss. I don't like it. And you don't have to know why. You can just say, I don't know why I don't like it, but I don't like it. I'm not comfortable with it. Can we try something else? And another thing that people forget or just don't know is that you can withdraw your consent at any time. right? We hear that about in real life scenarios, that you can withdraw your consent at any time. But in performance, you can absolutely withdraw that consent. So I've said throughout this entire rehearsal process, I've said that this scenario, this choreography that we've crafted was okay. But now, you know what? It's starting to feel itchy, and I don't think that I'm comfortable with this anymore. Again, that's when they call the choreographer or whoever is in charge of that moment to come in and work with them and say, okay, great, then let's change this. It's not a big deal. If the show has opened, right, we'll step in and we'll change things. And I know there are certain rules with how you can go about changing things depending on the nature of the theater, but there is always something that can be done. And people are afraid to ask for that.
It seems like this is all positive and great and a very progressive development. So that makes me immediately assume somebody has resisted it. Like, when you are doing this work and trying to expand this as a normalized practice and be like, hire me as your intimacy and movement and consent coach, everyone. Has everyone been on board? Have you pushed up against any sort of resistance?
You know, surprisingly, I have not met up against a lot of resistance, especially in the Philadelphia community. People have been really, really open and really excited about the work. But there have been a few instances where it's been, and I don't think it's anyone saying, no, this is a horrible idea. I think it's more, but I don't understand why we need this. Mm. Because, you know, we've been doing sex scenes in movies and theater. We've been doing violent scenes in movies and theater for so many years. Why do we need a choreographer? And people have more or less gotten on board with the idea of you need a fight choreographer, because giving two human beings in 2019 swords and saying make it look real, nobody knows how the fuck to use swords. Like, we don't carry swords. So that gets a little bit easier. But as with intimacy, for the entire history of performance, it's been, oh, the script says they kiss. All right, well, then so do that. And it's been publicly, I'm trying to be careful about how I word this, publicly, on the surface, it's been fine. Mm. There are some issues, but those people are assholes and they'll get fired and they won't work again. But actually, when you delve down, it is a huge issue. It's an enormous issue. But people don't, they're just not seeing it. Some people, I think they honestly just don't understand that it is a need. So that's really the pushback that I've gotten. And when I explain what I do, and when I explain why I do, and when I try to guide them into the mindset of, and you're helping this movement by bringing me on, then I start to see change. They start to think, oh, you're right. Yes, no, of course, we don't want to assault anybody. We don't want to hurt anybody. So I guess, yeah, having you in the room, if that helps, then let's just try it. And honestly, even if you don't bring me on in any kind of official capacity, like, you know, bring me in, pay me, let me sit in the room, let me just watch, let me just be a body where the actors know that I'm there for them should anything untoward happen. And best case scenario, nothing does. And hooray, we all figured it out. But worst case scenario / best case, I'm there to help if need be.
When you do these trainings with performers, like, are there certain folks who are like grasping it faster than others? Like, what are the keys to like making this work on like a literal level?
Young people.
Oh, okay.
I will shout it from the rooftops. Uh-huh. Young people are the way to go. Some of the best people I've had in these classes have been high schoolers and early college age students, because they don't quite understand how it works, but they know that it's important. And they're growing up in this beautiful time where, yeah, there's a lot of shit happening, but there's also a lot of people standing up and speaking up for themselves and for other. We've got, like I said, the Me Too movement and the Time's Up movement and all of these amazing movements happening, and they're being raised in that era. So these young people, I watch them. They're my favorite people to work with, because they're so surprised. Like, when I mention you can withdraw your consent, Like, I've changed my mind. I don't want to do this anymore. They're like, oh, wow. Or when I bring up nonverbal consent, we do an exercise similar to what you said where they walk around and they ask, can I touch your shoulder? Can I boop you on the nose or whatever? And then one of the answers is, yes, I've changed my mind. Mm. And they're like, oh. Or the answer is yes, and then they go to do the action, and then the person stiffens up or does some sort of body language that is a clear indication that that is actually a no. And there's always throughout the room every time a, oh, wow. Like their minds are blown. And it's a beautiful moment for me, but it's also a very sad moment for me because I just want to hold them and be like, oh, babies, you should have been taught this when you were children. You can change your mind and you can say no to anything. But they pick up these concepts so fast. And when I go to workshops, especially that are over a couple of days, I see them in the hallways and they're constantly like, okay, can I give you a high five? Can I give you a hug? Like they're really excited about it, much more than adults are, who adults have, you know, been around longer. They've grown up with a certain set of rules and guidelines that they like to stick to. And this is new and this is different. I mean, it's not. It's always been here, but it's in the spotlight now. So it's new and different and change is scary. So, yeah, well, I think the young people, that's the way to go.
Yeah, because I mean, the thing that stood out to me there was that, you know, they should have heard this from the jump. And yeah, word, they should have. But that would have required someone else knowing that to tell them. And I think that that's one of the things around sexuality, whether it's consent or pleasure or gender or any of these things. It's not that we got these messed up messages because our parents and their parents and the church and like government are just horrible villains. It's like sometimes there's new information. And sometimes we learn how to convey information that we previously weren't able to convey super well. And giving ourselves like some compassion for how we might have been previously less informed. And you know, like I look back on like the movies I watched and how garbage a lot of the messages around sexuality and consent are. On the last episode, we were talking about rape and Steubenville and I was thinking about how many movies in the 80s, like, is rape like just a funny plot element? You know, like, oh, he wore a mask and she doesn't know who she's really fucking. Isn't that crazy? No, it's wild. And it's like, we theoretically should have known better. Like, absolutely. But instead of, like, murdering everyone involved in the creation of that movie, which might be my instinct immediately, instead being like, let's learn from that. Let's not do that anymore. Because, like, we just, like, historically might have just been, like, I guess basically asleep on this.
Yeah, we don't know. And you can't know what you haven't learned. And somebody said that to me a couple of years ago, and I don't remember who it was. But somebody said that those exact words to me, and it was like, oh, God, you cannot know what you haven't learned. You can't know what you haven't been taught. And so when I first started this movement, I didn't start this movement, but when I first started this work with myself, it was around the election, right? The infamous presidential election. That was the worst time of everybody's lives. And I went into this deep depression. And then when I came out of it, I was just angry. And I just went after everybody I could find that had an opinion or a view that was different than mine. And I was dealing with it the best that I could at the time. And then as I kind of slowly came out of that and started looking around and reading articles and reaching out to people and spending a lot of time in therapy, I started to see that these people, they don't know. They don't know this work. And I say they, I mean just people in general. So if they don't know it, then why yell at them for it? Why not teach them, hey, I see you've been doing it this way. Might I offer a different way to do this? Let me put this in your hat and see if that sticks. You know, that's not an out. Let me put this in your hat and see if it sticks.
But that's a vibrant image.
We're going to go with it. But introducing the idea, and I've like you catch more bees with honey, and it's so true. I mean, sometimes, yes, of course, you've got to put your foot down and you say, no, you're a ridiculous human being and it's time for you to go home. But very often I have seen a lot more success just meeting people where they are and saying, okay, you don't know about this work. I feel that maybe you should, but who am I to say that? I don't know your background. I don't know where you come from. I don't know anything about you. I guess you haven't had the opportunity. Let me help you and see if that sticks. And usually it does. Usually that's way, way more helpful than just being like, you're a horrible person. Go to hell.
But sometimes it's cathartic.
It's so good. It's so good. Especially if it's on the internet and you can just be like, ah, call out. But JK, don't do that.
So the shows that you've worked on where you have been a part of this, does it look any different? Is the finished product different? Is there a demonstrable change in the way that the performers feel about it?
I think there absolutely is a difference. And it's not because my work is great. My work is great. But yeah. It's also because the actors are more comfortable. When I work with people, and whether it's violence or intimacy or whatever it may be, I do a lot more violence than I do intimacy. Whatever the case may be, I work with them, and again, I meet them where they are, and I say, you are two human beings, and your bodies do these naturally, and this is what you want to do. You're playing the character. You're making these important choices. Where do you want to go with this? What about we try this? How about we try this? Do you have any ideas? Fantastic. That's a great idea. Let's work with that. So it's not just me telling them what to do. Put your hand here. Put their leg here. Stab them here. It's them crafting it themselves with me guiding them. So it is more organic, and it does look more natural, and they're comfortable. I mean, you've seen people do things, anything that they're not comfortable doing, they look ridiculous, right? But if they feel it, if they can take ownership of it, then I think it looks fantastic. It looks so much better. And there are a lot of really great intimacy directors in Philadelphia who I've been able to see their work, and it's just magical. The difference that it makes.
When someone is crafting a theatrical piece or a movie or any piece of art like that, let's say they're like super small budget. They can't hire a coach specifically to come in, but we still want to take away the lessons from this. What would you offer to someone if they're making like a much smaller scale version of this?
It's really tough. Because, of course, you want to give artists what they're worth. And you want to pay for everything so that, you know, we're all making a living. But in my experience, the people who are leaders in this field, the people who you really want to work with, are going to work with you, right? You can reach out to them and say, hey, I understand this work is important and I believe in it and I want to support it. We don't financially have what you are asking for. Would you be willing to work with us? Or could you recommend somebody who could come in, just so we're not doing it on our own? We're not winging it. I have several people who work with me, who are training with me, that are at the point where they can go do some choreography. They can start working on shows. So I give their names out all the time. I can't do this project right now, but hey, here's so-and-so. They may be free, and they may be able to work with what you have, with your budget or with your time constraints or whatever. That way, at least there's somebody, there's something. I don't know anybody that would just say, oh, you can't afford it, then no, sorry, you're shit out of luck. Good luck, hope nobody gets hurt. Mm. Because most people that I have found who are in this art, who are part of this movement, yes, it's about making a living, but it's not just about the money. It's about getting this message across. It's keeping people safe. And I keep saying that I love teaching consent. It's my favorite thing to do. It's my passion. I hope someday I'm out of a job and I have to go find a new career, because that would mean that people understand consent and they know how to implement it and they know how it works. So they don't need me anymore, which would be great. But yeah, just talk to people, reach out, be honest about what's going on, acknowledge that this is your need and you want this, and then somebody will help you.
Are there like any just like pointers you could give in general? Like if it like just imagining like a much smaller scale thing, like mm-hmm. it's not even a full blown play, but like somebody's working on their duet drag act or whatever. Like what do you give to individual artists who are composing a piece that has more than one person that involves some kind of physical element?
Absolutely. Be mindful. Be mindful of yourself and be mindful of your partner or partners, whoever you're working with. And feelings are important and they should be acknowledged, but remember that they're not necessarily factual. So keep in mind, I may feel this way, but let me take the time to really sit with this feeling and decide, is it because I feel uncomfortable or because I feel unsafe? Communication is absolutely key. Keep talking to people. Just because on day one I said, it's okay for you to touch my breasts, I'm totally cool with that, I'm never going to change my mind. Day three, I might have found, you know what? I really changed my mind. I don't want to do that anymore. So I encourage people before every rehearsal to just check in. Hey, how are you feeling today? Oh, I've got really bad cramps. So that part where you lift me up around with your arms around my waist, maybe we can just mark through that today. Right? Let people know where you are and find out where they are and then meet them where they are. Consideration, communication. Those are, I think, the big, big things to remember. And you'll be all right.
Do you think that this has possibility of expanding beyond this? Like, I immediately think of the way dancers are trained to sort of like not respect their own boundaries, like to push past their boundaries.
God, I hope so. I hope so. Yeah, it's right now I focus mostly on plays and actors. But I did this past weekend, I went up to upstate New York in Rochester and I taught consent to a workshop of opera performers. And it was great. And a lot of them were like, oh, interesting. We never even thought about this because it just hasn't really hit the opera world as hard yet. I haven't worked with the ballet yet, but I would fucking love to. I'm trying not to say get my hands on them. I would love to get in there and work with dancers because I have a dance background. So I really, part of me is just, I really want to be with my people and I want to work with them. But yeah, I want this to really explode. And I think it's slowly starting to seep out of theater and film into other aspects of performance, but it's slow. And I'm really hoping that it eventually just catches fire and ignites and burns everything in its path.
Well, I hope that this prairie fire happens and you do all of the things and then you don't have to do them anymore.
Oh, yes.
And then you can go do something else.
I have to find something else that I'm good at.
You'll figure it out by then.
I'll figure it out.
You have plenty of time. I feel like this is going to take a second.
I'm going to be here for a little while.
It's going to take a second. This is so bad. Well, Jacqueline, all right. So let's say I'm a theater person and I want to hire you. Where do we send them? Where do people find out more about you and about this work?
Awesome. So my email is artevioleta @gmail.com. ArteVioleNta is the best way to get a hold of me. Send me an email and I will gladly send you all of the options. I have a website, but it's shit and I'm having it rebuilt right now because I did it myself. And now I've like, I should hire professionals who know what they're doing and they will help me be better at everything. So it's in the works, but I'm on like all the socials. I've got a Facebook, Jacqueline Holloway. I have Instagram. I believe it's Action Jax. I think it's Action_Jax, J-A-X. And I post everything on Facebook and on Instagram. I don't have I have a Twitter, but I don't remember the password anymore. So I haven't been on it in a while.
This is like the reality of 2019. We're just like, which social media do I still have actively? Like, I use Snapchat, but like not often enough. And then like just like,
I just got a Snapchat purely so my boyfriend, 6-year-old, and I can take fun pictures. We haven't posted anything yet because I haven't figured out really how to use it. But like, there's like these, it changes your voice and gives you cute button noses. So don't contact me on the Snapchat, but Instagram, Facebook,
TikTok,
email me. I don't know what you just said.
Okay. Well, I was into TikTok for like a half a second, and then I feel like the moment passed. But TikTok was basically like, it felt like the spiritual successor of Vine, because the videos are very short and people would do really creative editing with it. I was like, kids these days are brilliant. And it was very cool. And then it became kind of garbage, because I feel like it became pretty much like MySpace. Like, yeah, everyone was on there. And so the content wasn't as good anymore. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. This is my time capsule of me talking about TikTok and how I think the moment is past.
Yeah, I'm not as current as I'd like to be. My high school and college kids are failing me. They used to keep me current, but now I don't. I just I thought I got an Instagram a year ago, and I was like, man, I am up. I am cool.
Are they keeping you with the music at least?
A little bit.
Okay. What are the kids these days listening to that you work with?
The Ariana Grande. No, not even Ariana Grande anymore. I think
they moved on from Ariana. They moved on from Ariana to Kesha?
I don't know. I like Ariana and Kesha. I don't know.
It's all SoundCloud rappers. That's it. Everybody's listening to Tekashi 6ix9ine. Everybody. Every single one of them. Lil Yachty. That's it. That's all the music that's left in the world. Sorry, letting you know. Oh, and Post Malone.
I don't know any of these things, but I'm going to Pandora them as soon as I leave. Are we still doing Pandora? Is that a thing?
You know what? Okay.
God, so tell me we're still doing Pandora.
This is a fucking wild-ass side note from this. I was in an MRI recently, and they're like, we have Pandora. And my thought was, what? And then, so they put headphones on me, and I could listen to whatever I want. And I'm like, well, when I'm at the dentist, I listen to Usher because that's the most calming thing I can think of. So, like, I'm going to go in this MRI and, like, have to hold perfectly still. But in my brain, I'm like, do, 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 So Pandora apparently still exists is the moral of that story.
I'm down with it, but I'm cheap, so I still have all the ads, so
good,
probably
for you.
Fine.
Good for you. Yeah,
I work in the theater.
Yeah, they got enough money. Okay. All right, well, this is absolutely gone off the rails. Thank you so much
for coming. Thank you on so stage. Much for having me.
Well, this is what happens. Like, I was like, I'm just so hyper. I feel like I just ate 6 cupcakes. I'm like so excited to see you. So I'm just like,
I feel the same way.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for finding time to come on and telling us about this emergent field. And so everyone should fucking hire Jacqueline. Thank you for being on it. Yeah. And thank you everyone for listening. And have a great day. Hey, friends and family of Sex with Timmery. We are so grateful to have your listenership. We have the coolest fans in the world. It's pretty much the best. And we hope that the love is mutual. If you are interested in supporting the Sex with Timmery media, either the website, the podcast, head on over to patreon.com/sexwithtimmery and become a supporter. For as little as $1 a month, you can be a regular supporter and continue to bring independent media that provides the kind of information that you want to have out in the world. Over here at Sex with Timmery, we have been doing this stuff for years. As you've noticed, we've got over 200 episodes. The Sex with Timmery website has been up since 2008. We've been giving you the goods for absolutely no cost, and we will continue to do so as long as we can. So thank you so much for your listenership, and we do hope that you will check it out. Patreon.com/sexwithtimmery.
Let me ask you a question. Are you getting enough? I bet you'd love more, right?
Well, AdamandEve.com wants to give you more. 10 free gifts, more specifically. So you'll get sexy surprises for her, for him, for them, for they, for y'all. Stuff for everybody to enjoy, including 6 full-length adult movies. One of the gifts to you, one of the great surprises, is that it is free shipping on the entire order. So how do you get all of these presents? Well, it's actually surprisingly not that hard. So go to adamandeve.com, select whatever item it is you want. And what's fun is that for a limited time only, you'll get about 50% off on just about any item. And then when you go to checkout, use the code SWT at checkout. That's SWT, it's short for Sex with Simmery. I know you're very smart, you would have figured that out. But just to reiterate the point, use SWT at checkout at adamandeve.com. And this is not only a way to get free shit, but to support the show as well. So thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting. Now go get your free gifts. Thank you for listening to Sex with Simmery. Sex with Simmery, the podcast, is produced by Nathan Karuna. Our opening music is by Charles Evans. Our closing music is by Hanya Lee. Be sure to check out sexwithtimmery.com, Sex with Simmery on Facebook, and tweet at me, Timmery_LEIGH. If you're a fan of the show, if you like it at all, a little bit maybe even, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends all about it. And thank you.
There's a brand new way to get Sex with Simmery. In addition to this podcast and sexwithsimmery.com, you can check out some of our most fascinating conversations in our new column in SOT magazine. SOT is a very fun retro nudie magazine, and it's full of photos, art, culture, and sometimes pizza. You can read it for the articles, but you should also definitely read it for the nudity. The first issue is out now, available in print only, and it features three sexy pictorials along with art, writing, interviews, and not to mention that column from yours truly. SOT is ethically produced here in Philadelphia, and Sex with Timmery listeners can get 20% off by ordering their copy at SOTMAG, SOUGHTMAG.com, and entering the coupon code Timmery, TIMAREE, at checkout. That's SOTMAG.com. And the coupon code Timmery.